There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. Welcome to the Electric Drum. Today, I got a blast for the past for a lot of you. His name is Carl Babb. How you doing, Carl?
Oh, good afternoon or good morning, whoever our listeners. Yes, I'm doing fine. Thank God.
Mr. Babb, you were an educator here in the school system, but let's go back. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Costa Rica. I came here in my 16, 17 year. I went to high school in New York, Morris High School in South Bronx, right down 166th Street on Boston Post Road, not too far from Yankee Stadium. So I never missed a game.
You're moving on too quickly. Those younger years in Costa Rica, how were they and who did you live with?
Okay, those younger years in Costa Rica, my mom left when I was 10 years old and I grew up with my father and between us, eight brothers and sisters. So when my mother came up for economic reasons, she brought us up one by one from Costa Rica. So I grew up in Limon. I was playing in Limon, Costa Rica, beautiful province, which is still of my love. I went to grade school there, first through sixth grade, Tomas Guardia. And then I went to Colegio Diurno, and I left in, when I was in 11th grade and came to New York.
In those younger years when it was just you, your father, and your eight siblings, are you in the middle kid, or the youngest, or oldest?
I'm the fifth child, man, and there is no bad fifth. There's always a good fifth child, so I'm the fifth child.
Wow.
Five boys, three girls.
Five boys, three girls. And how was it growing up? Were you, did you all get along? Were there hand-me-downs? I mean, what kind of lifestyle was this?
You know that when you come from a family of five with five boys boys ahead of you, there's always going to be hand-me-down. So it was beautiful, man. We were poor, and I didn't even know it.
Well, how so?
Because I had everything, man. But, you know, you watch the other kids them across, and they, when like, you know, when we playing cowboy and Indians, the guys with money, they had two guns, and we only had one gun and no shields. So we had to put the gun in our side, like playing. So that's when we know we were poor, because they buy the two guns with shields and the cowboy boots and everything. We didn't have the boots.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that was the difference.
How was the economic times in that part of Limon growing up?
Well, the economic time is, you know, like you said, we had food on the table every day. I never went to bed hungry. And my father had a good job with the railroad company. So he was one of the bosses at the material department. So, you know, like we was okay. We wasn't rich, but we was okay.
What was your father's name?
My father's name was George. George Albert Babb. Jorge Alberto Babb.
What kind of man was he?
He was a silent ruler, but great guy, man. He was my hero, man. If I can be as half a man like my father was, I know I'm good, because that man, everybody in the neighborhood respected him. And, you know, most of the guys, then when they come around, because, you know, you grow up with five guys, when you come around in the neighborhood, the kids, man, I wish my father was like yours, you know. So, you know, you have a good father when kids in the neighborhood tell you they wish your dad was like theirs. And I had nothing but proud and pride when people mentioned that to me about my father. He was everything. He very strict disciplinarian. And of the five boys, I was supposed to be the bad kid. Believe it or not. Yeah, I was. Things that I would do, my brothers then wouldn't do because they was afraid. But I was daring, and I'll do it. That's why I was the first boy they shipped out to the United States.
Wow. Do you have any stories or something about you and your father, or one time your father came home?
Yes, I have the best stories, man.
Okay.
I can give you about three or four different stories about my father. when I was about 15, it's not something I'm proud of, but hanging out with the boy, we had a group that we used to throw parties, and it was five of us, and we used to throw parties, and we made good money throwing the parties. What decent parties. But one day it got a little bit carried over, and I had a little bit too much to drink. And the guys then brought me home drunk, and they left me, and then they run. And my father was on the porch reading the newspaper, and all they said to my father was, in Spanish, Carl tuvo mucho que tomar. And they run off. He had too much, Carl had too much to drink. And then they run and left me. So I'm sitting on the porch. I thought it was like 2 hours, man. My father's reading the paper, and he asked me three questions. And the three questions come in an interval of maybe 25 minutes. He said to me, did you ever see me drunk? And I said, nope. He kept reading the newspaper, and I'm standing up trying to fall down, leaning back and forth. And he said, the next question was, did anyone force you to drink? And I said, nope. And he kept reading the newspaper, and it looked like the question, like he was never going to stop asking. Then the last question he asked me, he said, why are you drunk? And that's the question I couldn't answer. And I still never answered until now, but I promised that it would never happen again. And he went into the bed. He went into bed and left me on the porch. When I realized he was sleeping, that's when I went to bed. He never mentioned that story to me again. But it's a story that lived with me and stayed with me. And it says, if you never seen your father do something wrong, or if you never get an experience of something that your dad did, you shouldn't do it either. And I learned from that. Never beat me, never punish me. He just let life go on. So that was one of the good stories. Another story was, he said, he doesn't look at grades like math, science, and English, or chemistry and physics. He only look on one grade, conduct, which is behavior. Mm-hmm. They grade you on behavior in Costa Rica, but you don't have to take a test. He says, everybody can't be smart, but your behavior is a given grade. Are you supposed to get an A in that grade, in that every marking period?
Wow.
And that, those things stayed with me. But I got good grades and other things, but my behavior was a little bit sloppy. And that's the only grade he looked at.
You were a challenging child. You were out there taking chances. Is it because you thought you were lost in the sauce a little bit with having older siblings and younger siblings?
No. The funny part about it was I was one of them. As a kid, I used to like to take chances. But the chances I take is like, in other words, when, we grew up together, one all for one and one for all. So my brothers, them, if they get into any kind of trouble, I would be the first one to tell them, go ahead and fight him because I'm coming in. I'm getting my licks. They wouldn't do the same for me. And then when we go home, then we gonna fight because you didn't come in and help me.
Wow.
Yeah. But not too many people pick with us because, five kids, man.
That's deep. Five
and,
bros.
Yeah, and when we came deep. But I was the one that would be always starting fights in the neighborhood.
Travieso.
I wasn't afraid. I started. Because I know, if a guy, you take advantage of things when you think you can get away with it. And I always thought I could get away with it because I had backing. Mm-hmm. And then you have a couple of boys from the neighborhood. You got your cousins on them that are with you too. So... And I ain't messing with him because he got too many brothers, man.
Brothers and cousins.
Yeah, he got too many brothers. And I had a sister who was like, in those days, she was like 5'11". She was big. She played center for the basketball team. She threw the discus and the javelin in high school, and she had the record in the country in high school.
Wow.
So she was like a tomboy.
Let's get names here.
My oldest sister is Myrna. So we had Myrna, who was my oldest sister, and then five straight boys. And then my two younger sisters.
What were the boys' names?
The boys' name Ernie, Jorge, Ronald, me, Carl, and Enrique.
And then,
two sisters, Sonia and Karen.
Oh, my God. So the big sister was all country high school.
Yep.
Wow. Everything.
Basketball, javelin, and discus.
So no one messed with you because they knew she was around.
And she was like a tomboy. She came to this country and she was part. She went in the army.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's retired. Yeah. She live in Indianapolis. And she's a Pacers fan. So and I'm a Knicks fan. So we kid each other all the time.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. Now, your mother. You said she left when you were 10.
Yep.
And then you were the first boy, but how old when you came
I was
over?
The first boy to come here. Okay. I was 16, going to 17.
Okay.
And then, you know, like, but I wasn't picked because they wanted me. Like I said, when my mom asked my dad, okay, you got to send one of the boys them first. They said, let him go first because I used to get into too much things. But I was a good student in school. I had good grades. I was leader for the marching band. I was captain on the soccer team.
What instrument did you play?
I played the drum, the big drum.
Oh, okay.
But then they moved me from the drum and made me the first junior leader. You got to be a senior in high school to become the leader of the band. And I was the first junior they made.
Okay.
And also, coming out of sixth grade, I gave the keynote speech. To this day, I still remember that speech in Spanish as if it was like if it's something that printed on me, man.
Let me tell you, you're still sharp at your young age. With that said, so when you came at 16 with your mom, you were not the first choice, but you were the obvious choice.
I was the obvious choice. And that obvious choice is for a reason.
How was that transition coming from?
Well,
Limon's a big city.
Limon is a city, yeah.
So it's not like you're coming from the country.
No, I wasn't from the country. But you know what? I was playing. My father played on the national team in baseball, and he played in Venezuela in 1945. And in 1972, my brother Ernie, who was considered one of the best athletes to come out of Costa Rica, he played soccer, baseball, and basketball. He was on the national team in basketball and baseball, and he played professional soccer. So he played in the 1972 World Baseball Game. And when Roberto Clemente took that, the Puerto Rico national team. As a matter of fact, I'm always looking for the picture that he had with Roberto Clemente. He had a picture with Roberto Clemente. And that same year is after that, Roberto Clemente died about 2 months after when he was taking the relief thing to Nicaragua. And that was very sad. I mean, I'm talking about it, and it's still giving me the chills because, you know, like, he was doing a very good deed. And, hey, to this day, we still mourn him. Mm-hmm. And to come here and also ended up as one of the assistant principal at Roberto Clemente, which is where I started out, it was like...
Full circle.
Full circle, man.
Wow. But let's backtrack because you are... You got story on top of story. Let's backtrack a little bit. So when you first come to, you say the Bronx, right?
Yeah.
How was that experience for you?
It was tough because I remember my sister then playing. And we're looking through the window. And you know, in the Bronx, we live on the fifth floor on Prospect Avenue. And we're looking through the window and the sun is hot outside, but the apartment is hot inside. So I don't know. This is my first experience. I come in the Friday night. Saturday morning, they call a couple of my friends who live not too far. They're going to come get me so we can go shopping and get a couple of things to, you know, look like I've been living in New York. So I put on a T-shirt and I'm getting outside. And they started laughing. So when I reach downstairs, I run back upstairs. I say, you guys, it was cold. But the apartment is so hot that I thought it was still summer. So that was my first experience, stepping out of the house in a T-shirt thinking I was in Costa Rica, and they never said anything to me. They just watched me and see what was going to happen. So the guy came, he rang the bell and said, okay, he's coming down. So I came down with, just like I'm dressed now, with a T-shirt. And when I put my head out, I said, yo, man, I need a jacket, a coat.
Wow. Wow. That Project Heat is what they call it.
Yeah. But, oh, interesting thing. When we live in the Bronx, across the street, you have the projects and you have the apartments over here. So my sister's them friend live in the projects. I didn't have no friend yet. So every time I come, I see, the girls them at my house, and the boys them, you know, like over in the projects. I didn't know what the projects was. So one day I said, Mom, why don't you get an apartment over in the projects? And my mother looked at me and said, son, those over there wants to come over here. These over here don't want to go over there. So I didn't know what the projects was, but I got a rude awakening. Everybody used to say, yo, man, we want to live where you live. But I wanted to go over to the project because that's where all the action at night, you know, oh, so-and-so had a fight. This is, you know, the action was in the projects. Mm. And I used to tell my mom, get a place over there. You know, you want to be in the action. She said, those over there want to come over here.
What was your mother's name?
Linda.
Linda.
Yeah.
What's one trait or ethic that you take with you that every day, or when you're making a decision, you can hear Linda going, mira.
Well, my mom, my mom is one of those kind of women that she always have old time saying, which is one of the things I picked up from my mom, you know, like those old time saying. The guys used to say, yo, man, you got all these old time saying. Because my mom used to drop them on us. She used to drop a lot of wisdom on her. And I remember, you know, like she would say to me, be careful, like a chicken outside playing, but be careful because the hawk is around. You didn't interpret it that, you know, like if you go too far away from Mother N, the hawk is going to get you. So she always said, Chicken Mary Hawk is near. So it's like, don't go too far.
Yeah. Man. So you navigate school? How was the navigation to the transition in school?
The important, when I came here, man, I thought, you know, like I was in my last year in high school. The funny part about it is in high school in Costa Rica, after 11th grade, you finish high school. That's your last year in high school. So I came here thinking I'm going to go to, you know, but they said, no, you got to go do one more year. I'm saying, no, man, I'm supposed to be good. But they gave me credits for chemistry, physics, because I was really advanced.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had to take English and American history and biology to make up. So I did that extra year. But the funny part about it is in my English class, I used to be shy because I came with a heavier accent than I have. And I'm going to tell you the reason why I still maintain my accent to this day. We was reading in English, and we was reading Shakespeare. And the teacher was calling out names. And when he got to me, he said, Mr. Babb. So I started reading Shakespeare. And in the middle of my reading, he stopped me. I said, my God, I finally got a Shakespearean in my class saying that I have the Shakespearean accent. And so now, I said, this man is blowing smoke on me, man. So every time we read in Shakespeare, the kids in the class, who some of them couldn't read, basically, say, yo, bad man, read, man. Raise your hand, man. So he took away. I said, hey, man, I don't have to sound American. I got to clear up my speech and sound the way I sound. And I will be Shakespearean. So that's the reason why I keep my accent. The man said it was Shakespearean and he was my English teacher. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to roll with it.
And you're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Carl Babb, educator, phenomenal man, a brother. You do have a Bronx accent. Now that we talk, your Bronx accent is just as thick as your Spanish accent.
Hey, man, you know, I roll with it because, it, like I said, I was in classes and I realized that, you know, would you believe that growing up in Costa Rica, I spoke English before I speak Spanish.
Hmm.
And Costa Rica was a Spanish country. Is a Spanish country. But the blacks in Costa Rica, we spoke English. And we spoke English first because we, the Caribbean English. My grandparents came from different islands. And my mother's mother is from Jamaica. My mother's father's from Panama. My father's father's from Barbados. And my father's mother is from Guyana, French Guyana.
No.
As a matter of fact, my grandmother used to speak that French, the Papiamento. But anytime we come in the room, she'd be quiet.
The patois. Yeah, the Guyanese patois.
That's the French, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So I had all that culture-ness in me, you know. And so, in other words, but the blacks in Costa Rica grew up bilingual.
Mm.
Not wait for the white, for the Spaniard, the white, you know.
The Spaniards spoke Spanish.
Spanish. The Spaniards spoke Spanish. And we maintain our culture in the Caribbean side.
Okay.
It's more like saying if you go into Eloisa and you know they got that, the Africanist,
mm-hmm.
We maintain our Africanism, our Caribbeanness with us because, you know, before we came through the Caribbean first, Africa first, then the Caribbean, and then Costa Rica, you know.
Mm.
So we stopped off someplace in the Caribbean and then from there we ended up in Limon. And
so I want to fast track a little bit because I want to get, how do you end up at Clemente as an educator? Because you went to college.
I came here on a soccer scholarship. I was playing ball in New York, and if I had to do it over again, I think I would have picked this. I had a scholarship to go to Howard University, but I didn't understand about HBCU. Coming in from Costa Rica because, you know, I'm just coming from, I didn't want to go too far from home.
Mm-hmm.
And New Haven was only 1 hour.
Okay.
From, you know, so I could have stayed in New York. I had offers to go to NYU before them. But I wanted to get out of New York because I was really partying a lot too, man. I started hanging out with the boys them and things like that, the girls, and, you know. And it was fun and I was still playing ball. But I never played ball in high school. Because getting near the first week in landing in New York, my buddies took me to the Italian American League. And in that time, they were paying $50 a game. And you know, early 70, you get $50 every week. I didn't have to do nothing. I didn't have to go work. I didn't have to do nothing. I know I'm getting 50. And if I score or do good, one of the Italian guys going to drop an extra in my pocket and things like that. And oftentimes I did well. So when we would play ball in gym in the high school, the coach used to say, oh, man, if I get you, we going to win. I said, coach, but he said, what you do? I said, I play ball on Sunday. I played in the Italian American League. Oh, so you playing semi-pro already? I said, I don't know if it's semi-pro, but they pay me to play. He said, oh, no, you can't play high school ball.
Oh, wow.
So I never played high school ball. And then when I went to college, I went to City College, Junior College, and Bronx Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I tore up that league. And then that's when the scholarship offers came, you know. Plus I used to walk to school. So, it wasn't dawn on me in terms of going to university yet. I was trying to feel my way out. So most people recommended me to go to junior college first.
Okay.
And I went to junior college. I did well. Made All-American in junior college, and then the scholarship then came.
How you end up in New Haven?
My coach knew the coach from New Haven.
So you went to UNH?
So they knew each other. My coach was a FIFA referee, and the UNH coach was also a referee. So he said, now, I had UCLA contact me to go there. It was too far. Howard, a lot of different Division I school. I said, man, just go right up here, man. You'll be all right. And I think it was the right choice. you know, come in here was easy. On Fridays after, I would go back to New York. So it was like easy. I would hitchhike to New York. In those days, you could hitchhike. I make a sign and I say New York. And oftentimes, I get two pickups and I'm in the city. Go wow. home, get food. My mom give me money to come back up on the train. And the next weekend, I'm back in New York again. Hmm. Right after, if we're playing game, after the game, or if somebody's parents come up and driving through New York, I get a ride. I never spent in New York a weekend in New Haven in my first year in wow. New Haven. Never knew what downtown looked like. I would keep going back to New York, keep going back to New York. And then one day, a good friend of mine, Marshall McKeever, he was at UNH. He said, come on, man, let me take you out in New Haven, let you. And he took me to New Haven, took me to all these different clubs. I said, man, I didn't know this existed. I said, I don't have to go to New York and party no more, man. That kept me in New Haven.
What was your first job out of college?
As a matter of fact, I went to visit this lady yesterday. My first regular job coming out of college, Tommy Reyes was my roommate. And I used to volunteer at Puerto Rican Youth Services, PRYS.
Later, Latino Youth.
And then we turned it into Latino Youth. With Tommy Reyes, Chris Rodriguez, and myself, we turned, instead of making it Latino and Puerto Rican Youth, so we call it Latino Youth, because I was in Puerto Rico. I was a Rican, but I wasn't a Puerto Rican. So we started that. We wanted to attract other Latinos. And then we, you know, we write our bylaws, and we separated from Junta. We was under the umbrella of Junta.
So before that, you say your first job.
My first job, I was...
You're rooming with Tommy.
I'm rooming with Tommy, and a job hoping up at the New Haven Boys Club.
Okay.
As a family counselor, coming out of college. I was getting ready to go back to New York. I remember I graduated May 5th, 76. May 5th, 76. Get ready to go back to New York. And 1 month into New York, Tommy said, hey, man, there's a job. I came back up, and they was going to pick somebody else, and Pura Delgado, who I went to visit yesterday in the nursing home, she was working at PRYS, and she was very political in the community with Gumpe del Rio, Gumercindo del Rio and them, and the grant call for a person that was bilingual. And they was giving it to someone who was only spoke English. He said, nope. So Pura intervened, Gumpe and those. And because of them, I got the job and I end up staying there. And then the next year, the following year, I heard from UConn and they accepted me into their master's program. And when they accepted me into their master's program, I went into the School of Social Work, in school administration and counseling, but I kept the job while I was still in grad school.
Wow.
I became the director after. And after graduating from UConn, I became a pediatric social worker at Yale New Haven Hospital. Worked there for 2 years, and I had a supervisor who says to me, what are you doing in here? You young, look at all these young doctors. At that time, it was mostly white guys coming in. So why don't you apply and go back to medical school or go back to school and become a school principal? And she pushed me. Julia Hamilton pushed me. And I left the hospital and I took a cut, sorry, but I had my summers off. So I went into the school system as a social worker. And I started to shadow Marion Hinman and a couple other principals. And they said, this is what you need to do. So I, watching them, did that for like 4 years. I'm watching them. And then I went back to Southern and got my degree in school supervision and administration. John Doe came into town and looking for people. And everywhere he goes, I was the only bilingual social worker in the school district at that time. So I covered the entire school of New Haven.
Wow.
There was only one bilingual social worker in New Haven at that time, and that was me. So the Latino community, everybody started complaining why we only have one bilingual social, or school are short. And everywhere he goes, he said he heard Carl Babb. He wanted to meet me. So when I came and I met him, he says, oh, so you Carl Babb? I said, yes, sir. He said, you the one who cover? I said, yes, sir. He said, so what do you want to do? I said, well, I'd like to be a supervisor, a principal one day. He said, you got your papers? I said, no. He said, then don't talk to me then. And I left his office and went straight over Southern and signed up into the administration. And in less than a year, I had all the requirements to become an administrator. Mm-hmm. I came back and I showed him my certificate, my intermediate certification. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and said, you ain't nothing but a rascal. Because I didn't stay still. The man said, if you got your papers, come see him. If you don't have your papers, don't go. Mm. And I went to see, and the rest is history.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Carl Babb, and many of you know him as an administrator, your vice principal. If you're old enough, your social worker. And if you're old enough, your teammate and your roommate, if you're really that old, Mr. Reyes, if you're listening out there. What message would you have to the youth in regards to the story of perseverance, especially for those who don't understand the mission when you try to come over here to better your life?
Well, one of the things I always say is, look where you're coming from. Look what you have and look for what you want to have and go out there and get it, because it's possible. But you always also got to have a godfather, because if you don't have a godfather, you can't get baptized. So you have to have a godfather, but you got to be willing to put the work in. I got a private practice in social work, and I do bilingual. I do therapy and still, but I'm not as active as I should be. I kept my license open, and sometimes I do it for free because, not everything is about money, but you can do it if you put your mind to it and if that's your goal. So my thing to the youth is, listen, whatever you leave out there, 5 years from now, you will come back and find it. I go back to New York, and I see some of my buddies still hanging out at the park. They go to work, but they come back and they're hanging out at the park. They never went to school. So when I come back, they say, oh, there comes the professor. They know certain things that I don't do and I wouldn't do. But they always wish me well. I mean, kids in the neighborhood where we grew up in the Bronx, if something gonna go down, they say, yo, schoolboy, you got to leave. Mm. So they'll tell me, I was one of the guys them that they would look out for and say, look, man, your mom is always going to work early in the morning or coming home late, and you got to make it out of here, man. We didn't get a chance, but you got the chance, and we're going to make sure. So the guys them would protect you also, they'll tell you, hey, man, you don't want to watch so-and-so. Don't hang with so-and-so. And that's how you make it. You make it with the village raising the child. So some of the guys I'm in the village look out for me. And, I'm not ashamed to say it. They knew. They said, y'all, man, we got to watch schoolboy. Don't bring him around here. Hmm. stuff going down. Don't bring him around here. So I didn't hang out with some of the guys I'm in the neighborhood, but for a good reason.
So Don't be ashamed of being smart. Don't be ashamed of taking consultation. Be open to... Because one of the things of this day and age, people have difficulty being told what to do. I mean, it's a trauma. It's a trauma response. But sometimes you have to listen to your peers and your elders when they're trying to look out for you.
And advice, like my mama also used to say to me, I can give you advice, but I can't force you to make the choice. And that always stick with us. We can give advice, But you can't make the choice. You got to make the choice. Take the advice and make the choice. And I'm telling you, man, it's like, I'm thankful for both of my parents, man. I never saw anything negative from their side. And, you know, like, sometimes some guys would say, oh, man, you got your mother and your father. You know, but I live with one and I live with the other. But it wasn't by choice. My father would come up to the States and visit and things like that. Or my mom would go down to Costa Rica in the later years, you know. But I think the separation, at when you're 10, you miss him. You miss having one or the other. But the thing I saw with my father became my mother and my father. At 10, you know, when my mother left. I wasn't afraid to, you know, injury or anything, you talk to your father, you know, wasn't afraid. Yeah. And I don't think, after 10 years old, I never got a beating. That was the good part, you know. My mom used to beat me more than my father, you know. But it was fun. And we did things like, you know, normal kids do. Sometimes you get a little bit overboard, but you always know when to come back. I grew up in the church also. I was an altar boy. Mm. So from 12 years old, I was an altar boy until I came to the States. So church was always one thing. If you don't go to church, you can't go play no ball. You know, hey, where you going? You're not going to church? I don't think you're going any place if you didn't go to church. So after you go to church, you can go do anything. You can go play all you want. Wow. But I remember getting up 6 o'clock because service started at 7 in Costa Rica. And then sometimes you had to go in the neighborhoods far out where there was only a small church, mm-hmm. and the priest would go. So you needed an assistant as one of the altar person. And I would disappear from church after I finished serving because I didn't want to go on the line outside on the line to those small churches because there was a soccer game going on and I didn't want to miss it.
There you go. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Babb. You're listening to The Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. This is WYBC 94.3, The Rhythm of the City. You just heard the words of Carl Babb. Shout out to St. Luke's.
That's right. Celebrated our 180th
there you go.
Birthday.
Thank you so much for your time. And like always, to my listeners out there, thank you very much for listening.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.